Hello and welcome to Data Today, brought to you by Zorka.
I'm your host, Dan Klein, and I look after everything data and AI at Zorka. We're living in a world of opportunities, but to fully realise them, we have to reshape the way we innovate. We need to stop siloing data, ring-fencing knowledge, and looking at traditional value chains. And that's what this podcast is about. We're taking a look at data outside the box to see how amazing individuals from disparate fields and industries are transforming the way they work with data, the challenges they're overcoming, and what we can all learn from them. In season two, we're exploring how we can use data to save the world, from helping people discover their history to combating fake news. We're going to be covering a lot of ground. Today, we're discussing a ubiquitous data source, money. Specifically, we'll focus on how effective financial management can enhance the public sector and higher education's ability to serve their communities more efficiently. It may seem evident that these institutions' financial resources could be optimized, yet finance teams often lack the bandwidth. Moreover, wrangling numerous financial data points to derive meaningful insights, let alone plan for the future, poses a significant challenge. Joining me today is Peter Fosgen, co-founder and chief operating officer of 3+1. Established with Joe Rollison, 3+1 assists clients across the United States in identifying opportunities to increase their revenue. While 3+1 provides various services, our discussion will primarily center around CashVest, which consolidates an organization's financial data and determines the most effective utilization of their funds. Before assuming his current role, Peter spent 13 years at the Bank of America. Prior to that, Peter's initial job after university was with the Oneida Indian Nation, where he gained experience in analyzing financial data and optimizing funds for public health.
I was hired as a process analyst. Now, it was in the finance department. Now, this was a semi-sovereign government, meaning they had their own police force and they had their own healthcare system and they had their housing programs, all to serve the Native Americans of this tribe. They wanted to better assess that the money we're allocating to each of these departments is actually getting the greatest bang for the buck. And so I was sent in as a process analyst, which means now you come in and you ask a lot of questions, right? How do you do this? And how do you do that? And taking notes. So there were lots of interviews and then looking at statistics. And so the easiest one might be the police force, whose vehicle repair cost was double that of national averages, right? So it's asking about what is going on and learning about what others are doing to try and minimize those. And that would be done at every department, including they have a casino, which is where they get so much of their funding, but the security department of that casino, going in and just understanding and then making recommendations. It really blended well experience-wise, because anything we do even now is interview. We talk to the government, the individuals who are there. So we understand what's going on in the back office and recognize that money is kind of the grease and the oil that keeps things running. So it was really great experience for me to be able to take this opportunity to interview, understand how to talk with people, try and dig down deep into what's going on, and then blend it with the financial aspect.
So this is creating impact in the community based on the insights that you're drawing out of the data, if you like. Would that be a fair assessment?
Exactly, because if we can allocate the same number of dollars to the department but get greater degree of services out of it, that's very impactful, right? It doesn't mean we have to raise, for some it's raise taxes, for them, you know, if they have a not as great a month or the profitability goes down from their casino, whatever it was. So right, it's trying to make sure you keep the services at the same level or able to expand them without necessarily having to increase the funding associated with it.
What's the overlap into what you're doing now?
There was an overlap in terms of Joe Rollison had his company. 3 years after working with the United Indian Nations, he actually hired me into his own small company, which was on the cusp of being sold and eventually was sold to a bank, Fleet Bank, which became purchased by Bank of America, where I then spent 13 years learning the internal workings of a bank. And again, totally provided me some really great perspectives. How do banks determine profitability of a client? How is it they charge for fees, but also all the services that they offer? Prepaid debit cards, ACHs, wires, all these terminologies. How do they cash checks and put this through? And their billing statements, right? Learning all of this information, once again, added yet another level of knowledge that allowed us then to bring to bear here at the company we created, 3+1. So that 13 years of banking was really beneficial. Eventually, Joe went to a different bank for a while. And then after 5 years, we were like, hey, you know, the opportunity's ripe. Let's get together and be partners. And we think we can really make an impact in the public sector.
Excellent. And also here, Peter, in parallel, your kids are going to school and you're getting involved in the school system in your local area. Talk me through you getting involved in the local school districts.
It was so unanticipated in terms of a quick request from a friend who knew of my financial background in banking. He knew that I had a master's in public administration, so a love for the public sector. And a bit of a controversial year of lots of cuts, teachers being cut, which is never popular, right, for schools and for parents and class sizes, field trips being cut. And he's like, you have a financial background, why don't you run? That happened in March for an election that was 2 months later, and I was running up against the incumbent. So he asked me to do that. It was a controversial year. People were looking for change, and that was 12 years ago, I was able to win and get involved. And obviously with the financial impact, immediately put on the audit and finance committee to start taking a look at all of our information and seeing how we can make an impact. Again, money funds organizations, right? It's what provides the grease for everything that you need to do. And nobody was happy. Nobody wanted larger class sizes. They wanted field trips back in the budget. I mean, as small as that seems, field trips are what makes kids excited about school. And looking, where can we find these dollars? How do we know that our dollars are being used in the best way possible? And therefore, bring back these programs, expand programs if we can. And I'm happy to say in 12 years, yeah, all of that's back. And we have really great class sizes, almost the smallest in the county. We're just in a good position to try and service our students, of which, yes, my children, I have 5 children, have gone through this system. And it's been a joy to serve in that way and bring, I hope, my background, my expertise to bear for the community.
Okay, so now let's bring these two stories together. So you got the finance background, you're frontline in the education sector and your local school board in the school district. So bring me up to date with 3+1. What did you and Joe set out to do with 3+1, and why did you set about doing it?
So in our interviews and learning about finance offices and public sector, we recognize a gap. I don't want to be unfair to the public sector, but a gap in knowledge and perhaps experience of the inner workings of banks and how do you maximize value of your cash assets. And that gap in the interviews we've come to realize in terms of this, the focus that these finance professionals have, their focus is very purposeful. Be transparent and make sure that no tax dollars are abused or absconded with, right? That everybody knows that we're taxing people and we have to have an accountability for how they're used. That focus is very different than saying, but at the same time, let's invest them or put them in ways that help stretch those dollars as far as possible so that we can minimize the tax burden onto our community members. That's the area that's lacking, is the understanding of investments and internal workings of the bank and what do they need to pay for banking services, and above and beyond, how do you push that further? And doing it in very safe ways, because they don't want to be in the news also for taking a speculative step into the investment world, right? So stocks are out of it, type of thing, but there's just not common knowledge because the background is brought up very differently. So we are bringing our experience of understanding the inner workings of the bank, talking with them and understanding their roles and responsibilities with the office, but also having a very strong data analytics background to be able to say, we understand the flows of these dollars, we understand when things are needed, bring all three of these areas together and really provide a very powerful impact that stretches those dollars, allows you to expand your programs, buy a new fire truck, hire a new teacher, fix potholes, whatever it might be, whatever the program is, we want to be able to help expand the dollars that are accessible to you without putting the burden on, on your citizenry.
3plus1's initial client was Wayne County in upstate New York. One can imagine their initial skepticism when Peter and Joe approached them offering assistance. They required assurances that the fees paid would be recouped and that conducting a comprehensive audit of their funds would prove worthwhile. Despite their reservations, Wayne County took a chance on them, and today, 3plus1 boasts numerous success stories. Peter will later share a case study illustrating the significant financial opportunities unlocked when data is thoroughly understood. For any small business experiencing rapid growth, scalability is a crucial consideration.
So scalability became an issue for us when we were going national, right? Expanding to another state and trying to get confidence. Every state, especially in the United States, feels like they're very unique, right? That's our experiment of 50 states within a single country, if you will, and they each have their own state government. And so they're unique and they have their different laws. So we had to overcome all those barriers to do it, but we need to be able to do it and manage it in such a way that we could handle the increase without just throwing bodies at it. Same thing for us, right? The amount of cash we had to hire people.
Talk me through the types of data that you're trying to get hold of and why are you getting hold of it?
To stress test it, we want every single financial transaction that's flowing through your government. Every single one. But it doesn't matter if in 10 accounts you have 100,000 transactions or 200 accounts with 10,000 transactions. We want every single one. We want to see every check that you cut. We want to see every check that you deposited. Any cash, and that's for 12 months, by the way, a minimum of 12 months, and then we build on that every quarter. So constantly adding to that data lake. Added to that is the billing statement. So once a month, a bank will issue a billing statement. Here's the volume of transaction you used. Here's the number of times you did it. And here's the price. And here's how much you owe us. We want to get at all of those and take a look at the services. Are you using good services to maximize flow of cash? We also get their budgets, just looking at budgets and their investment policies. Those are all data points we bring together and then put them into our models.
And over the last 10 years, have you got any sort of really big impact things that have happened in various counties or school districts that you've worked with where you go, wow?
One of the counties here in southern New York, Allegheny County, used it in a different way. They were going out for a borrowing and the credit agency now uses as part of their score, 10% is based on your knowledge of your liquidity, right? Liquidity being how much do I need to have available and am I maximizing the value of that cash that's not immediately needed? And she's like, well, I'm working with 3plus1, and she provided then the analysis that's constantly being updated. We aggregate more data and the credit rating increased. And the estimate from her was just that was a $1.2 million on that borrowing of loan of interest expense.
Wow.
So it decreased the expense line in that side. On the other side, they're making hundreds of thousands of dollars in more interest earnings. So you've decreased your expense on one side, you've added to your revenues on the other, and now you look at where are our greatest needs. In some years it is, we need additional vehicles for this county, right? We need infrastructure upgrade. We were borrowing for that purpose. Can we borrow a little bit less? So one impact's there. For another one, it was reducing they're borrowing. They were borrowing every year, hundreds of millions of dollars. This is the fourth largest county in the country. And we were able to eliminate by showing the models, your cash is always there. We know where it is. We can stress test it. We can forecast it. Eliminate that borrowing in its entirety. It was a short term. It was a cash flow borrowing. But eliminate it, saving again all the interest expense related to that borrowing. And on the other side, with the confidence that you have the cash, let's start investing it.
So this, it's not hyperbole to say you're absolutely at the center of using data to maximize how much money is available for frontline services. I suppose the question is, how does that make you feel within the context of where you started?
Well, obviously taking a risk of starting a business and quitting a job, I feel quite happy that the success is there. But it is more than that. Job satisfaction is more than just making sure your business is successful. It's that the clients view you that way. We wouldn't do anything without the data, right? If we didn't have it, we couldn't give them these results with great confidence that we put confidence intervals of 95 to 99% and have this accuracy coming out of models. So that data, not hyperbole, it's a must. We won't offer our services without getting, again, a minimum of 12 months of data to be able to do these things. And it is that information, that very specific information, and then technology, right, that simply wasn't available 30 years ago, that run Monte Carlo simulations 50,000 times or more to get to the level of confidence that this information you can make decisions on in a quick way, right? You no longer have to worry about opening this book and that book, but you can make a quick decision and have a very powerful impact.
How do you find people within the school districts understand how 3+1 can impact? I assume it's got a fairly high understanding, or am I wrong?
No, it is. So the counties and schools seem to be our highest two areas of public sector. So there's cities and villages and towns, but the counties and the school districts seem to be the area where we have the greatest number of penetration. And I think it's because of how quickly impactful that is, especially in the schools. So we're all experienced COVID around the world. It's a global moment. We are hearing again around the globe even that the mental health impact that COVID had on young people was huge. And where we see these dollars being put to work now in my district, and can't offer my services to my district, at least not charge them, because that would be unethical, but they do get the benefit of me sitting on the audit and finance committee. But regardless, we see these dollars going to hire mental health professionals. We have psychologists in most schools, counselors in all the schools, where we did not have that before. These were shared relationships. And it's not just in our school district, right? It's all the ones we see. They're dealing with things they didn't have to deal with before, or not at that same level, right? It's at a higher level. Therefore, you need more resources. More resources in this case is people. And if your budget doesn't grow nearly as fast, but you're hiring more people and your student population is flat, that does mean we have to find the revenue to support it. And revenue typically means taxes. And taxes are not loved, right? Nobody cheers for a higher tax rate. So to be able to expand their revenue from an interest income standpoint, helping them understand that other dollars were available that you can bring in, COVID relief funds from the federal government, and then you stretch those relief funds as well by maximizing their value, has allowed so many districts to look at those additional positions and just address the issue at its core with people.
Currently, Peter and 3+1 serve 2% of counties in the US. Their primary challenge remains scalability, but their recent partnership with the National Association of Counties has greatly facilitated their expansion. In Peter's view, the ultimate objective is national dominance. Go big or go home. They aspire to serve every county in the US. Described as an entirely unique service, 3+1 may attract concerns about potential competition. However, Peter appears unworried.
So not so much competition. The highest barrier that keeps people from entering, I think there's two, is the amount of data we collect. And in the United States, there are not yet open banking laws. And that makes it a challenging method for us to collect data. We can't just simply use technology yet to aggregate all the data that we want. And that's a high barrier. We've overcome that challenge, some of it by the number of people we've had just to get data aggregation. And thankfully, there's not that competition yet. I say thankfully as a small business owner. I have no doubts that it will. So no, not real competition for exactly what we do. You will hear constantly that we do this, but nobody gets every single transaction. They'll typically get a month summary. You brought in $10 million and you spent $7 million, so you have a positive of $3 for the month. But you can't stress test that because it's only 12 data points, right? Where we're getting, like I say, hundreds of millions and trillions, and we're stress testing data points on a daily basis. The cultural awareness is a challenge. As you can imagine, we service people. And we have to be aware that a finance office feels like they are doing this job, that they're doing a good job. And so the approach really is understanding that technology advanced so much that these types of models, this ability for us to come in and get every piece of data, is trying to approach it at a way that doesn't become offensive, that makes finance offices feel like they weren't doing their job, that they weren't the great overseers of these tax dollars, because they are doing a great job of that. But again, it's from a different mindset, right? That we account for it, we keep it transparent, we show that it's not being used unreasonably. And then they can also come out and say, and now we know we're also maximizing its value. So we have to overcome a little bit of that cultural feel of what a finance office is doing.
We talk a lot about transparency of data, openness and transparency. And I'm curious now, because if I reflect on what you've just said, the lack of openness in technical terms by the banking community in the United States is, as you say, it's a high barrier for a lot of these counties and the public school system. So what thoughts do you have in terms of lobbying and taking some of the sort of initiatives from Europe around open banking initiatives that we have here in Europe? What sort of thoughts do you have around the impact that could have on the United States?
Full support. I think it impacts not just the public sector, but now we're talking also businesses and other things and their ability to more efficiently access their financial information and then be able to do exactly what we're trying to do, is model it and stress test it so that you can make better financial decisions. So we're big advocates for it. We realize if we're successful that it might lower the barrier of entry and introduce competition, but that's not the point, right? The point is it's the right thing to be able to have more easy access to your information and be able to use it in such ways that enhances then the public goods.
I'm curious to push your thoughts on transparency more broadly, not just within the banking sector. I'm sort of almost seeing the US is perceived as being more open, and yet here we are talking about the US banking system not being very open.
The challenge, I think, in the opposing priority that is winning the day really is around the security of that financial information. So the fear, and I believe there's a couple hearings that we've already had just early this year, is for the federal government to push for more open banking laws with the confidence that it's also secure. And that seems to be the real blind spot, right, is that it can't be done. So we need to look to Europe and say, hey, how have they accomplished security while allowing for openness? Because we should be able to do that here. But right now, security wins the day, right? That it's a black mark for anybody to have a security breach, especially of financial information. And so I think that's the bigger challenge, is trying to convince anybody, regulators, the banks themselves, this can be done and be done well and secure. And so right now, yes, it does seem more closed. It's not that our clients, all of them, can get their own data. They do get their own data. It's not as efficient, right? It's not as easy as it could be. And so they have access to their own. The public itself may not have as much insight as they may like to have in terms of, this is my government, this is my town, this is my county. How's the money flowing? How much is it costing them? And are they doing great things with it? Not, that is truly more challenging for individuals to have access to.
The other topic that comes up when you process very large volumes of data and you're giving analysis is the idea of showing the lineage of when you've taken the data from the banks and the transactions, all these trillions of transactions you're talking about. How do you go about showing and exposing the lineage and creating that trust that where you've got to with your insight that then drives the impact in your customers still holds true from a lineage perspective?
So one of our earlier clients, right, every year their cash position was just increasing. It was inching up. And our stress test models were saying, for example, that they have some dollars that could go out as long as 5 years investments. And in the public sector, that makes them nervous. If I lock it up and then suddenly I need it, I could take a loss by selling the investment early or whatever. But we're like, the models are strong. We know you're going to be nervous, so you don't have to take that step and go 5 years immediately, but let's get you out to a year. Well, as more and more data became, you know, we allocate it and now we have 3 years, we could say, but your cash position is constantly increasing, right? You're constantly having more to work with. And now they have five-year investments, right? They've been able to recognize that they can preserve and protect their interest income by locking in certain portions. But the lineage, if I'm understanding that part of the question, right, to show that here's the history of your data, and that's leading us to make these forecasts, but it's because it's based on every single transaction. And that really is the emphasis we try to make, is we're not talking about summary information on a monthly basis. We're talking about daily, every transaction being stress tested so that you can have confidence in the model results.
Excellent. So if we go forward 12 months, what would you really like to have achieved with 3+1 in 2024? Give me some ideas of your sort of short-term goals for 2024.
My dream that I've been using, the dream phrase, is infinitely scalable. Regardless of the number of clients who are now, you know, coming to us, we can onboard them regardless of how many it might be that month. And right now, we're not there, right? Our technology is not there to infinitely gather that data. And infinitely may be a bit of a misnomer, might not be quite the right word, but that's the dream, right? Is that a year from now, we can onboard a number of clients and service any and all of them without a lot of sweat of what it will take to do it well. One of our mantras internally is exceed expectations. Always exceed expectations. Any type of growth comes with the threat of diminishing the level of services, the quality of services. So it's infinitely scalable in a way that always provides that same positive impact. You're going to pay us $20,000, you're going to get $200,000 in benefit out of it.
Peter, what are your final takeaways that you'd like to share with our audience?
That every dollar has value every minute, every second of every single day, right? If you borrow money, it never takes a holiday. You pay interest on it until you've paid that loan off. The other side of that equation is true. If you tax people and you have a dollar sitting in your bank account, it has value. And that value is impactful in the public sector because it allows you to increase and enhance the programs and services that you have. So take advantage of the cash that you have, maximize its value, because it'll allow you to expand your programs and then impact for the positive your citizenry.
I believe that everyone, from public institutions to private citizens, can optimize their financial resources. For citizens, the main obstacle is often financial literacy, while for the public sector and higher education, it's the challenge of forecasting the potential financial benefits of investments amidst their already demanding responsibilities. However, every saved euro, pound, or dollar contributes to a system that can actively benefit the community. Business ecosystems are not new. What is new is that they are becoming increasingly data empowered. To realize complex opportunities, we need innovation beyond boundaries, democratized information, and close collaboration between diverse players. Collaborative, data empowered, borderless innovation is how we embrace a world of exponential change. Thanks for listening to Data Today, brought to you by Zulca. I've been your host, Dan Klein. For more information on Zulca's work, please visit our website.